peoples, this is the Conspiracy Oz podcast. I'm your host, Mick Raven. It is Sunday, the 7th of April, 2024. This is a review covering alternative news and events. Call plus 61 02 800 6198 anytime. Drop me an email at conspiracyoz@protonmail.com. Go to the website conspiracyoz.com. Download the podcast from iTunes, Spotify, or podomatic.com. And get the D program. Just a quick story off the center that I noticed the other day. That because being a music teacher, being a guitar teacher in particular, and also being into the guitar itself for probably 44 years now, when a story like this pops up, I sort of notice them. Most people, it just blows past. It's just a headline and it's gone. But when the Kiss rock band sold all of its intellectual property rights, everything to do with them, when they sold out, because that's what it really is, even though most people would say, oh, no, they're making money. Just have a listen to this story. This is, and it did catch my eye because, and I'll show you, I'll tell you why. I mean, rabbit holes just pop up everywhere, but this one was an unusual one right up my alley. So it's got Swedish entertainment firm Pop House acquires rock band Kiss's music catalogue. This is on the 5th of April 2024, abc.net.au. And it says, Swedish entertainment and music investment company Pop House says it has acquired the music catalogue, brand name and likeness of the US rock band Kiss. That's all its music, people. That's a big deal. Financial terms of the transaction are not being disclosed, but the Associated Press estimated the deal is worth more than US $300 million, which is about $456 million Australian. It says, Pop House Entertainment Group, established by ABBA's Bjorn Ulvaeus, is also founding investor in the ABBA Voyage show in London. Pop House previously partnered with Kiss during the final night of their farewell tour in New York in December 2023, when the band unveiled digital avatars of themselves. It says, our mission is to fulfill the band's vision to become immortal and to let new generations discover and be part of the Kiss journey and carry it forward. That's Pop House head of investment, Johan Lagerlöf, said in a statement on the company's website. With the help of the fans' energy, probably the money too, the band, our expertise and creativity will make that vision happen. Bassist and lead singer Gene Simmons, of course, said the band has always been breaking new ground in popular culture. This partnership will ensure that we continue to do so for years to come, he said. Ka-ching. $450 million. I mean, come on, Gene. It says, Pop House said it would create digital versions of Kiss, with an avatar show planned to launch in 2027. So get ready, people. All these famous people line up to become avatars, to be immortalized, just like on a movie where you've got actors immortalized in movies. Now the pop world wants to be immortalized in avatars, which will probably perform on screen or in 3D format. Who knows? This is probably why this is happening. It's the birth of the hologram. Anyway, so it says, Pop House said it would create digital versions of Kiss with an avatar show planned to launch in 2027. So I'm assuming an avatar show is exactly what I just said, a hologram show of the band in 3D, but they're not actually there. So it says Kiss are Pop House's second investment outside of Sweden following the acquisition of Cyndi Lauper's music catalogue in February 2023. It says they're the latest to participate in ongoing trend of blockbuster acts and their rights holders inking deals to sell their back catalogues, often for impressive sums. Now, you'll understand why Pop House have the funds, people, because you're wondering, how are they going to give half $1 billion to Kiss? Of course Kiss are going to take the money, but who's behind it and why? Oh, boy, does the plot thicken. It says, it's big business, especially considering two-thirds of all music streamed is made up of catalog music, and streaming accounts for 84% of all music industry revenue. It's very true. I mean, even for my podcast, Spotify are the biggest listeners now, and that's because it's app-driven. And that's not taking it away from Podomatic or iTunes, but you can see that the ones with the best flowing stream services will win over the voters. They will come and they will spend the dollars. Now, the problem with Spotify is the artists themselves get next to nothing for the plays. I mean, that's already been documented. That's not the issue here. The issue here is globalist companies buying up the music that influences the youth and the youth of the past into the future. That's what's happening. This is a marketing ploy. This is like when you hear, as an example, a McDonald's ad playing I Was Made for Loving You by Kiss. That's where it stops people. Because once they acquire the influence of that, they virtually have all of the media. You think about it. The press tube media, they're already being done and dusted. You've got all the movies that are sort of coming through platforms like Netflix. That's done and dusted. So you can see, even Amazon have jumped on the bandwagon, and Disney, they're all streaming because they know that's where the eyeballs are. This is what's been happening ever since YouTube hit the streams years ago. People have realized now that that's where all the eyes have turned. So it's obvious that the globalist eyes, the eye of Sauron, would obviously turn towards that market as well. So reading on, it says, not every artist disclosed the amounts involved, but some deals have been estimated as much as $500 million. Well, we just heard that one from Kiss. Artists such as Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, Justin Bieber, Stevie Nicks, and Shakira have all sold their catalogues. There you go, people, sold out to the devil. In 2020, Bob Dylan sold publishing rights to his catalogue of more than 600 songs to the Universal Music Publishing Group. The singer's collection includes modern standards like Blowing in the Wind and Like a Rolling Stone. Industry experts estimated the deal was in the range of US $300 million, which is $500 million as well. So in Australian, it says in 2021, Warner Music Group reached a deal with David Bowie's estate for worldwide rights to the prolific singer's recorded music catalogue from 1968, including Space Oddity and Let's Dance. Terms were not disclosed, but of course he's not around, is he? But I bet you would have done it anyway, even if he was alive. It says not all artists consent to or have control over the sale of their catalogues. In 2019, music manager Scooter Braun's Ithaca Holdings announced that they had acquired Big Machine Label Group, which was led by Scott Borchetta, the home of Taylor Swift's first six albums, for an estimated US $300 million. It says the US New York Times reported. In response, Swift started to re-record and release new versions of those albums, labeled Taylor's version, in an attempt to reclaim her masters. This is exactly what happened to Prince. I don't know if people remember what happened to Prince back in the day, but the artist, formerly known as, had another problem with Warners as well, where he fought them in the courts and proceeded to lose. So he re-recorded all his hit albums under his own label. This is what happens, people. The music industry has been hijacked many years ago. Look, the whole music industry thing, if you just want it in a nutshell very quickly and briefly, a band like the Grateful Dead back in the 60s, when you had government bodies like the CIA giving them illicit drugs like LSD to see if they could pacify the youth. That was the whole point of introducing this sort of, what was it called? It would have been like a chemical drug to see if they could pacify the youth at the time, which was around the time of the Vietnam War, when all the youth were going a bit crazy. You had free love. The government, the American government, was trying to figure out a way of pacifying the youth to control them. And they actually introduced LSD to the pop world to try and see if they, and it, of course, got out of hand, didn't it, people? And here we are today. Every second person is vaping. Chemical drugs are good, aren't they, people? But who introduced it? Go and do your homework, people. This stuff has done a 360 now, where globalists control the entire music business, and they always really have. It never really got let loose. It was just in that interim, just after the Vietnam War, where you had all the people protesting and you had all the Black Panther movement. You had a lot of protest movements that were sort of slightly off center, and the government were trying to control that. And just for a history lesson, I just dug just a bit on the CIA and the Grateful Dead, and the fact that the CIA had the LSD before the Grateful Dead, obviously. This came out in medium.com, 5th of December 2015. Did the CIA's experiments with the psychedelic drugs unwittingly create the Grateful Dead? And they did. And you watch this, people, when I read this, you're going to go, ah. And this is where the whole drug movement sort of came from. This is pre-everything. This is like when the government were experimenting. I'll read it. Just let me read it. It says, trying to write a definitive history of the acid tests, a series of multimedia happenings in 1965 and 1966, in which everyone in attendance was stoned on LSD, is like trying to organise an aquarium's worth of electric seals into a nice, neat row, sorted by length. You will never get the creatures to stop writhing, let alone straighten out, and if you touch them, well, they're electric eels. It says, in 2015, key details from two of the earliest acid tests, which were funded and organised by the One Flew Over the Cuckoo Nest author Ken Kesey and his entourage, the Merry Pranksters, have become a preoccupation among certain music lovers. That's because this year marks the 50th anniversary of the Grateful Dead, the house band for most of the drug-soaked Panchanals. It says, while music historians agree that the group's first gig as the Warlocks was on May the 5th, 1965, at a pizzeria called Magoo's in San Francisco, suburb of Menlo Park, funny that, there is less unanimity about when Jerry Garcia, Bob Weir, Ron Pigeon McKernan, and Phil Leish and Bill Kretzmann, first took the stage as the Grateful Dead. Was it on December the 4th, 1965, at the San Jose acid test, the same night the Rolling Stones were performing a few blocks away? Or was it on December the 10th at the Fillmore Auditorium at a benefit for the San Francisco Mime Troupe, as stated by the band on its website? Or was it the very next night on December the 11th? And it says, for some accounts, a week later on December the 18th, at the Muir Beach acid test, for which a poster exists bearing the band's new name. This stuff is important, it says. After all, if scholars cannot agree upon a one true date, how will legions of deadheads know when to post photographs of themselves in full tie-dye regalia on Facebook? That's funny. This gets a bit down the rabbit hole, people. It says, fortunately for Nicholas Merriweather, getting to the bottom of this weighty question is not his job. You'd think it might be, since Merriweather is the Grateful Dead archivist for the McHenry Library at the University of California, Santa Cruz, where the voluminous Vault Grateful Dead archive is housed. But when it comes to the Dead's earlier years, Merriweather gets a pass. The archive doesn't really start until 1970. This is why no one knows what happened at the beginning, people. He tells the author over the phone, because the band didn't incorporate until that year. They've got a few things from before then, but precious little. Nothing would please me more, he adds, than to be able to say, come on down and I'll show you my acid test trove. Sadly, he doesn't have one. It says, in today's culturally conservative climate, that's so true, it's difficult to imagine a university, even one such as esteemed countercultural bona fides as the University of Santa Cruz, creating a public space to honour the overconsumption of psychedelic drugs. Still, it would probably surprise many millennials and a lot of their parents to learn that in 1965, LSD was legal with a prescription, usually from a psychiatrist. That meant LSD was widely available, as easy to get your hands on as, say, OxyContin and other prescription drugs are today. In fact, and this is the clincher, the acid tests were somewhat late to the psychedelic party. The CIA began experimenting with LSD in the early 1950s, dousing everyone from prisoners to prostitutes, usually without warning, let alone consent. So true, people. To study the drug's disorientating effects. In fact, some of the professors they doused and they killed themselves. There was one in particular, I can't remember the story, but these are facts, where they didn't care. They were just going to give anyone it to see what it would do. And it says that's how Ken Kesey learned about the drug in 1959. This is the guy that funded the whole Grateful Movement drug taking at the beginning. When he signed up to be a test subject in the CIA's notorious MKUltra program. Future Grateful Dead lyricist Robert Hunter was also winningly dosed by the CIA. So there it is, people. From the very, very beginning, I'm not going to read any more about it, but there it is in black and white, exactly how the history of the drugs of LSD started. It was government introduced by people on the inside. This is exactly what happens today in the globalist field of prostitute media. The whole thing has been psyoptic control from the very top. And it just doesn't seem that way because we keep getting Netflix, we keep getting told the headlines, and we keep telling, they keep telling us we're all going to die from climate change. So true. Anyway, getting back out of the rabbit hole, climbing back out and getting back to the story of KISS. So the company that took over KISS's image and intellectual property rights, the whole thing, the catalogue, is a company called Pop House Entertainment. And I thought, okay, it looks like Bjorn Ulvaeus, one of the original members of ABBA, you know, the blonde guy, the guitarist, he's the guy that started the company up. It says Pop House Entertainment is a private entertainment company based in Stockholm, Sweden. The company creates, acquires, and develops brands in various related fields such as music, wait for it people, podcasting, stage performance, and gaming. Pop House invests in music rights as well as other types of intellectual property in the entertainment industry. Founded in 2014, and this is important, by Connie Johnson and Bjorn Ulvaeus, it has since been affiliated with many of Sweden's most notable entertainment brands, including ABBA, Swedish House Mafia, and Avicii, among others, or Avicii probably, among others. Per Sundin currently serves as the group's CEO. Well, there you go, it's his name. So it's got the history of the entertainment, Pop House Entertainment, established in 2014 in Stockholm, Sweden, by Bjorn Ulvaeus, founding member of the group of ABBA. It says, and Connie Johnson, founder of EQT Partners. And I went, who's that? So, and this is big because these people, Per Sundin, the guy who's the CEO, was previously the CEO of Universal Music. And he was instrumental in the emergence of Spotify. So this is a big deal, people. This is where globalists have grabbed hold of these newcomers and realized that they could control the entire pop industry, like, you know, everything in it, from just grabbing this. And this is what it is, because kids are into virtual reality and games. They're not out in the soccer field kicking the ball as much as they used to. They're still out there, but a lot of them are starting to gravitate to this software programs and website building and anything to do with sitting on a chair and staring at a screen. That seems to be the go. So I looked at this and I thought, well, then who is this Connie Johnson and who is EQT Partners? Because EQT is going to be a big powerhouse in the future simply because of the association. So this is it. So I look up, of course, good old Jimmy Wales, EQT Partners. And it says EQT is a Swedish global investment organization founded in 1994. So you go, okay, they've been around more than 20-something years, nearly 30 years. I think it is 30 years. And it says it funds in private equity, infrastructure, real estate, growth equity, and venture capital in Europe, North America, and the Asia Pacific. It says as of 2022, EQT's assets under management are 210 billion euros, US 227 billion. It is ranked the third largest private equity firm worldwide based on funds raised. So the globalists have totally got their claws in it. So I wanted to know, well, who are these people that are the venture capitalists that are, because it's a public company. And I thought, oh, I'm going to have to look it up. I've got to see who is steering this ship. That, you know, Bjorn from ABBA doesn't really know. He probably does or he doesn't, or he doesn't care. But these are the people that are going to control the future. And people like Gene Simmons and KISS, they know it. That's why they sold out. There's no point competing with this. You might as well jump in the bandwagon, which a lot of these artists are going to do. And then people will think it's cool because they're jumping on the bandwagon. That must be all right, but it's not cool. This is a globalist takeover of the arts industry. I mean, I saw an article, and I think I've already mentioned it on another podcast, or maybe last week's, I can't remember if I have or not, But actually, I don't think I have. I think this is the first. But musicians in Australia were, they did a survey to find out how much they earned a year. And it was $6,000 average. It's like $100 a week or something. That's dismal. That's probably the same as 50 years ago. It has not changed. So that industry is dead in the water. And kids coming through do not want to, they might play Guitar Hero, but they're not going to go out there on stage, if there is a stage, and be a Guitar Hero. Days are dead and buried, people. So it says here, the company was founded in 1994. It established venture capital business and it went public in 2019. So that's when the globalists jumped in. Okay. As soon as it went like global in 2019, that's when they came. It said the firm and its associates have offices in, this is everywhere, Amsterdam, Copenhagen, Frankfurt, Guernsey, Helsinki, Hong Kong, London, Luxembourg, Madrid, Milan, Munich, New York, Oslo, Shanghai, Singapore, Stockholm, Warsaw, and Zurich. As of 2019, EQT had a 50% share in investment company Pinolin Bidco, together with two minority shareholders, Alba Europe and Miles Capital. In 2021, EQ acquired, I mean, why would they do this? Life Sciences Partners, a European venture capital firm with approximately 2.2 billion euros of assets under management. And it said, followed in 2022 by Barring Private Equity Asia. So they're everywhere, people, managing funds of $20 billion. So this is not a small player. It is a really, really big player. So I thought, who is steering the ship? So I went to, see if I can get past this one. And I can't get past it. Okay, there's a pop-up on that one, so I can't look at it. But I'm in the market screener one. And, it's got a pop-up too. That's because I've already looked at it a few times. One second, I'll get the info. Now, a lot of the major shareholders I had not heard of, there were things like Investor AB, it's an investment company, and they're Swedish. Another Swedish one called Gold Cup. Then there's a lot of private people, but you've got EQT AB is actually inside their own shareholders, which is sort of unusual, but not really incredibly unusual because BlackRock invests in itself and Vanguard and Norges and the rest of them. But sitting down the bottom there was Norges Bank Investment Management. That's a Norwegian globalist firm, a banking firm, like a central bank for that part of the world. And I thought, okay, we've got to look at Norges. I've never really looked at Norges before, people. I've always seen them in the top 10, but never sort of leveled in on them. So they're a Nordic side of the global central bank control in the north side. So we're talking like the Scandinavia area, but still a big player. But anyway, I wanted to see, well, okay, who invests in Norges? And so I keep going. Even when I'm doing a search on Norges Bank Investment Management, I see headlines all over Google's first page where it's got Disney gets Norwegian fund NBIM's backing in boardroom. And that's like straight from Market Screener. And it's just, they're massive. It's a very, very big company. Anyway, so I'm going to have a look at this company one here and see if this gives me the rest of them. Now, we know who's going to be there and we know what's going on, people, don't we? Well, Market Screener let me down, people. The pop-up's there, but it's not showing Norges Bank, which is really odd because they sit in the top 10 of just about every company. And they say it here. This is on their own site, Norges Bank Investment Management, which Market Screener won't show for some reason. It's got, the fund is the largest single owner in the world stock markets, owning almost 1.5% of all shares in the world's listed companies. This means that they have holdings in 9,000 companies worldwide. In addition, the fund owns hundreds of buildings in some of the world's leading cities and an offshore wind farm. The fund also receives a steady flow of income from lending to countries and companies. So there you go. That statement alone, the fund is the largest single owner in the world's stock markets. So for a company that won't list on Market Screener, it's very odd. Very odd. Norwegian company. It says Norges Bank Investment Management manages the Norwegian government pension fund global. It says we manage the assets of more than 1,590 billion dollars. Would that be $1.5 trillion, people? The fund is invested in international equity, fixed income markets, and real estate and renewable energy infrastructure. So this is 100% globalist driven by central banks, without a doubt. And they're making it extremely hard to find anything about them. So I'm still going to keep digging. I'm not giving up. So one sec. Well, that's something that was staring me in the face, people, and I didn't look at it and didn't see it, even though I thought that the company was public. It is not. It is 100% owned by the Norwegian government. It is their central bank. And it's probably one of the most powerful institutions on the planet, which is not overstating it, but these are the guys that invest into that company in Sweden that is going to be controlling all the pop icons and all their back catalogues as such. So that's one arm. Then I thought, well, okay, I can't find anyone directly involved with this Norges Bank because it is obviously 100% government owned. And I said, well, what do they own? What have they invested in worldwide where they can control something? Because it's a central bank, people. Don't forget that. That was something staring me in the face and it didn't click straight away. But it's actually a central bank, which means it's part of the globalist chain of central banks, which is a world government, a world bank. That's the whole point of centralizing everything. So a very big player. And then I thought, well, if they've got something to do with even something as a remote as Kiss, the rock band in America, through another fund venture capitalist, what other tentacles are out there around the world? And see, when I read that thing about 9,000 companies that they've invested in, well, surely there must be something happening in Australia where these people are got their tentacles in. And I looked, and the first thing I thought of, well, yeah, they've got to be aligned to Vanguard, BlackRock and all the others, and they actually are, because they're always in the top 10. So these people are the round table of the world government. This is where it's headed. So anyway, I dug these ones up. So this is from fintel.io. It's like a site that shows the holdings of certain large companies. In this case, it's got the Norges Bank, and it's got their top 10 security holdings. Microsoft, then Apple. None of these are surprising, by the way. Amazon, Alphabet, Nvidia, Meta, Tesla, Broadcom, JP Morgan Chase, and looks like El Lilly and Company. That's the top ones. But remember, there's 9,000, but they're the top big ones that is in the big listing. So I thought I'd mention it because it gives you an idea of how big a company like this can get, and it's actually owned by a government, which goes to show you that the government are actually the round table all around the world. They're just the same as corporate. That's really what I'm trying to say. They are big players the same, okay? And you've got to look at this. You've got to realize that it's not about the individual voting person voting a government in. This is an agenda, and these banks that are run by the market share and what's happening out there are all working in unison with the other ones. They're all going for the same agenda. And this is interesting because when I dug further, it was completely true. And this is to do with climate change. I mean, who would have thought? Who would have thought? But it has here. And also, Norges Bank are in the process of destroying all the oil companies and their way of producing oil. And that was something that was a really big eye-opener. I thought, wow, how are they doing that? So I'll get to some of those stories too. But first of all, just have a listen to this. And this is from governance-intelligence.com. And it says, the Norges Bank divested from 86 companies in 2023 over ESG concerns. And you think, what's an ESG concern? And this article came out, so I can get the date for it. And it's February the 8th, 2024. So not long ago. It says, world's largest sovereign wealth fund steps up net zero pursuit. And you're going, net zero pursuit? Norges Bank Investment Management has stepped up its climate plans and expects its portfolio companies to follow suit as it continues to divest from more companies carrying high environmental and social risks. So straight away, front of the agenda, this bank. Last year, the Sovereign Wealth Fund divested from 86 companies that it says pose ESG risks and identified companies with heightened risks across a variety of ESG topics. And you're going, what's ESG? Including potential violation of human and labour rights. So it's to do with the high environmental, and I'm not sure what the G stands for. I'm going to see if I can just find that first, but it's to do with environmental concerns, obviously. One sec. I should have guessed that straight away. Environmental, social and governance is a set of aspects including environmental issues, social issues and corporate governance, surprise, surprise, and can be considered in investing. Investing with ESG consideration is sometimes referred to as responsible investing, or in more proactive cases, impact investing. Thanks, Jimmy Wales. That was from Wikipedia. And so continuing on, it says, ESG risks and identified companies with heightened risks across a variety of ESG topics, including potential violations of human and labour rights. What about Xinjiang in China? Are they against China with the 2 million people incarcerated? Yeah, let's turn a blind eye. Insufficient risk management related to corruption and business models, highly exposed to thermal coal. In total, the NBIM has made 526 divestment decisions since 2012. Now, before I read on, I found another site that I thought was incredibly interesting. Nothing to do with them. Well, definitely to do with them, but nothing to do with what they are proposing. This is on a different foot, you could say. And it says this. This is from a site called BankTrack, which I think is a great idea. BankTrack.org. It actually looks at all the banks and sees what nasties they're doing and it sort of reports on them. This is from February the 8th, 2024. So around the time they were pointing the finger at the rest of the world, this is what they were doing. So it says here, dodgy deals. This is on the site. It's got all the other stuff too, sustainability and about and news, resources and accountability, but it's got dodgy deals. So I clicked on it and it says, Norges Bank is linked to a number of companies and projects that BankTrack considers controversial, called dodgy deals. Example, as a current or past financier or through an expression of interest. The profiles below provide more details on the nature of Norges Bank's link to these deals. So this is what I do here, people, is I jump down the rabbit hole of these globalist institutions that want to control the world in the future. And they want you to do as you're told. That's what's happening here, people. So it says here, and I just thought this was hilarious, it's got show the record profiles. Illegal Israeli illegal settlements. So I'm just going to click on it. It's to do with construction. I have no idea what this is, but it's going to probably outline the dodgy deal. So let's have a look. So it's clicked on here. Now there's a lot of, it's quite a big list. I don't want to go through all this, but it's got Norges Bank owns and manages shares in the First International Bank of Israel through its subsidiary Norwegian Government Pension Fund, which is active in the Israeli settlements. So they're not going to be helping the Gazans. They're going to probably put their hand out for the gas, almost for sure. Then they've got another one here. Norges Bank owns and manages shares in the Israeli Discount Bank through its subsidiary Norwegian Government Pension Fund, which is active in Israeli settlements. So this is a list of where they're pointing the finger at something that's not quite right. They've also got another one here. Norges Bank owns and manages shares in Bank Hapalim through its subsidiary North Norwegian Government Pension Fund, which is active in the Israeli settlements. So it's gone through a list of dodgy deals. And then it's got Norges Bank owns and manages shares in Bank Leumi through its subsidiary, which is active in the Israeli settlements. And finally, Norges Bank owns and manages shares in Mizrahi Tefahot through its subsidiary Norwegian Government Pension Fund, active in Israeli settlements. So not a good thing. Now, the second one, this is also interesting too, people, the Pego power station in Portugal. It says in, let's have a look at what the problem is. It says it's a top shareholder in Engie. So here's a company saying, oh, we've got to close down these coal-fired power stations, but secretly they have, it says in back in 2021. So they may have gotten rid of them, but they did. They were the top shareholder in Engie. And if you're going, who's Engie? I'll just click on it and tell you. Yeah, what I'm getting at, people, is it's, they're hypocrites, okay? Engie SA is a French multinational utility company, which is headquartered in, looks like, La Défense, Cerbeval, what looks like, Kerbeval, I can't say French, people, which operates in the fields of electricity generation and distribution, natural gas, nuclear, renewable and petroleum. It is an active in both upstream and downstream activities. So there you go. They're the biggest top shareholder in Engie. So you're going, okay, what else? Then we move on. It gets funnier. BHP Billiton, coal mining. And it says, what has it got here? It just says equity share owner manager. So it's got €9 million in BHB Billiton, coal mining. So again, finger pointing. Oh, it's got Engie then again, which is the one we just said. Coal of Africa. And it's got, well, they've got no information there, so I'm not going to read that one out. They've got the Engie one, which we said. Another one called Eletrobras, which is Brazilian. And it says that it has 8.7 million euros invested in that company, which is an electric power company, coal electric power generation. So, I mean, another one here, the beef industry, Marfrig in Brazil. This is the beef industry because, you know, they want to get rid of those cows, people, because of the methane. They have 2.7 million US dollars as a shareholder in that company. So I'm not going to read any more, but there's a couple of other ones. Orano Mining, which is a nuclear electric power generation plant. They've got 10 million, nearly 11 million euros as a shareholder in that one. And finally, it looks like Sime Darby, which is in Malaysia, and agriculture for palm oil. Oh, yes. They've got 97 million euros invested. It says as an underwriter or manager through government pension fund in Norway. So they are amongst baddies, okay? And they've been caught out just on that one. So I thought I'd mention it. Now I'll go back to where they're pointing the finger again. It says, and this is back to the story called governance-intelligence.com, with the Norges Bank Investment Management divested from 86 companies in 2023 over environmental issues. So continuing on, it says, as it increases its commitment to net zero, Norges Bank Investment Management says it has been consistently integrating its ESG data into its investment processes. The mandates for our portfolio managers require that companies to take the ESG considerations into account in their analysis. It says, the firm notes in its latest responsible investment report, they know well our expectation of companies on sustainability matters and our positions on governance matters, and we discuss them directly with companies. It says, in the report, which outlines the Norges Bank management's climate strategy from last year, its investment mandate calls on companies to align their climate goals with that of the Paris Agreement and establishes a long-term goal for responsible investment. We identified ESG risks across all companies in the portfolio and benchmark using a variety of risk monitoring processes, the NBIM writes. In broad terms, we consider ESG risk to be high if a company's market valuation may be adversely affected by its management of ESG issues. The firm's research observes that 2,385 portfolio companies had set science-based net zero 2050 targets by the end of 2023. In addition, 790 since 2022, and it says last year also saw MBIM take steps to initiate climate risk discussions with 633 companies, with nearly half of these engagements concerning how to foster net zero goals. You can see the globalists are definitely steering the central bank. And I've got a real smoking gun at the end of it, people. It says the NBIM filed four shareholder proposals in the US calling for greater commitment by those companies towards meeting net zero goals. Remember, they have shares in just about every globalist company in the world. In 2023, the bank screened 1,048 companies entering the fund's equity benchmark index and identified 317 as having high exposure to ESG risks. This led to 263 companies being placed on an internal monitoring list, while NBIM decided to divest from or abstain from investing in the remaining 54 firms. NBIM also identified 124 companies associated with severe ESG incidents or controversies and placed them on a monitoring list. I wonder if they placed themselves on one, people. I'm not going to read any more of that, but boy, does this smoking gun get bigger. One sec. Okay, this is from theguardian.com. Came out on the 14th of May 2020. So this is 4 years ago, people. But have a listen to this. Norway's giant oil fund ditches stakes in Australia's AGL over fossil fuel concerns. $1 trillion fund also puts BHP on observation list carrying risk of future divestment. That's a company they were a major shareholder in. So it says Norway's gigantic sovereign wealth fund has dumped its stake in Australia's energy company AGL, which owns coal-fired power stations, including the carbon-intensive Liddell plant, which is now closed, people. And actually, Albanese wants to put a solar panel farm on top of it. This is, we are done. We are seriously done, people. It says Norges Bank, which manages US $1.1 trillion government pension fund Global, has also put Australian mining giant BHP on an observation list, placing it at risk of divestment in the future. Another one they had a major investment in, people. The fund, which is so big it owns an estimated 1.5% of shares listed on the global stock exchange, invests the spoils of Norway's own North Sea oil bonanza. So, what a hypocrite. However, over the past few years, it has adopted progressively stricter rules about investing in fossil fuels because they are a central bank, globalist controlled. They are being influenced by the world government and the New World Order that wants to make sure that you get out of your car, you lose your house, and you get in the queue to be told and eventually culled. That's what's going to happen, people, once they take everything off you, including your job. It says, however, over the past few years, it has adopted progressively stricter rules about investing in fossil fuels. Its latest rules brought into force in December, this is 4 years ago, allow it to exclude or put on observation companies that get 30% or more of their income from thermal coal. So you're not allowed to earn money from coal, people, or they get rid of you. Base 30% or more of their operations on thermal coal, produce more than 20 M tons. So I'm thinking that's like 20 million tons of thermal coal a year, or produce power of more than 10,000 megawatts from thermal coal. They won't even let you get power from it. The megawatts is what powers everything we do. Without it, I wouldn't be able to do this podcast and you wouldn't be able to listen. So these people are trying to restrict power. That's really what's happening here. It is believed AGL has been disqualified because of its coal mine at the Loy Yang in Victoria. Now, Australia has something like 25 coal mines and just about all of them are getting closed. We will have none. China, on the other hand, has 1,500 and India much the same. I wonder if Norges deals with those two countries. It says the company had hoped to close its earlier Liddell coal-fired plant in 2022, but after a political bun fight has pushed the date into the following year, which is, it's now closed now, people. Glencore, which has assets in Australia and produces more than 130 million tonnes of coal a year, has also been struck from the fund's list of permitted investments. So this is a foreign company, or government, I should say, doing the finger at us because of what we're doing with coal. That's what's happening here. BHP also holds extensive thermal coal assets, although it has recently been moving towards selling them. Funny that. Norges Bank said that the fund had sold out of companies it has put on the banned list. Banned list, people. It says at the end of last year, it owned 0.46 stake of AGL worth $65 million. For several of the companies of which exclusion is now being made public, the market situation, including the liquidity of individual shares, has meant that it has taken a long time to sell the shares in a reasonable manner, Norges Bank said. That explains why a long period of time has passed between some of the decisions and the publication. They're still cashing in, but activist shareholder group, the Australasian Centre for Corporate Responsibility, said it showed that AGL and BHP, which it described as iconic Australian companies, were both well behind the times. Yeah, close yourselves down. I'm not reading the rest. Ridiculous, people. But here's a foreign bank from a foreign government telling us what to do. What does that sound like to you, people? And here's another finger pointer it's got here, and this is from AustralianFinancialReview.com, AFR.com. Norway prepares to dump up to $3.7 billion in Aussie shares. Norway's massive sovereign wealth fund may soon rip up $3.7 billion out of the Australian fossil fuel companies after the Norwegian Parliament passed a tightened set of ethical investment rules. Now, that was from June 13, 2019, pre-pandemic. But at the same, I can't read the rest because it's got the subscriber thing. But the next article, and this is a letter, and it's to the Climate Disclosure Unit, Australian Treasury, 6th of February 2023. And it says, we refer to the Treasury's consultation on climate-related financial disclosure, running from the 12th of December 2022 to the 17th of February 2023. We welcome the opportunity to contribute an investor's perspective on the design and implementation of disclosure requirements for climate-related financial risks and opportunities in Australia. Here comes the finger, people. Norges Bank Investment Management is the investment management division of the Norwegian Central Bank and is responsible for investing the Norwegian Government Pension Fund Global. The NBIM is a globally diversified investment manager with 12,429 billion Norwegian kroner at year end 2022. Of this total, $24 billion is invested in the shares of Australian companies. We are a long-term investor working to safeguard and build financial wealth for future generations. So there's their stake, $24 billion in Australia. As a long-term investor, we need information on companies' exposure to sustainability risks, how these are managed, and relevant performance metrics. We rely on both information related to the current performance of a company, i.e. how and where it creates value today, and information on drivers of value that may be predictive of its long-term performance. Sustainability information supports investment decisions, risk management processes, and ownership activities. As a global investor with holdings in companies in 70 different countries, we have a clear interest in this information being reported in a consistent and comparable manner across markets. That is why we have supported the establishment of the International Sustainability Standards Board and its mission to develop a comprehensive global baseline of corporate sustainability disclosures. We encourage regulators and standard-setting bodies to set mandatory requirements for climate-related reporting and strongly support basing the Australian's climate reporting regime on the forthcoming ISSB standards. Australia's alignment with international standards is essential, both to retain access to global capital markets and to minimise compliance costs for Australian businesses operating cross-border. What a threat. We support the expansion of mandatory disclosure requirements to listed and unlisted entities over time. It says this is important for creating a level playing field, very level, eh, people, and for accurate reporting of Scope 3 emissions. None of this targeted at China or India, people, which depend on the entity's suppliers and customers' Scope 1 and 2 emissions. This is all about targeting the West, people, like what I was talking about last week with watering down the West. This is part of it. It says, we do, however, recognise implementation challenges and therefore support phasing in the requirements over time to ensure reliability of reported information. At minimum, limited assurance could be required for climate disclosures under the forthcoming regime, with reasonable assurance required for Scope 1 and 2 emissions. Assurance providers should be subject to independence and quality management standards set by relevant international standard setters. This will support the consistency, comparability, and reliability of sustainability. What a mouthful that was, people. And that was, we thank you for considering our perspective and remain at your disposal should you wish to discuss these matters further. Yours sincerely, Chief Governance and Compliance Officer Kareem Smith Ihenatchu and Elisa Sensig, Senior ESG Policy Advisor. These are just people who just sent a letter to the government and go, you better start complying to our rules or we're going to cut your $26 billion. That's what's happening, people. They got them all on board over the decades, and now it's tightened to the point where people can't back out. They have to do as they're told. Incredible. Incredible. And actually, just to finish off that entire can of worms, people, EQT, the original article I was talking about, the Swedish investment company, alongside Bjorn Ulvaeus, who have that company called Pop House, EQT are directly aligned to the World Economic Forum. I just thought I'd throw that in there just to round it all off from that KISS article, how we've gone through a couple of rabbit holes to get to where we are. It says here, and this is on the World Economic Forum's site, the WEFORUM.org, EQT. The EQT funds investment in companies in which EQT can act as a catalyst to transform and grow operations. The firm's business model focuses on driving the process of change and repositioning, driving top line growth while combining financial discipline with industrial expertise. EQT has raised 21 private equity funds active within three overall investment strategies: private capital, including ventures, mid-market and equity, real assets, including infrastructure and real estate, and credit, with approximately €30 billion in raised capital. That's on the World Economic Forum site, people, where they're pushing them. And they've got their link there, and it's got articles from EQT with decarbonizing cities. How do you harmonize buildings, mobility, and infrastructure? With climate change accelerating, a more comprehensive, integrated approach is needed to decarbonize and harmonize urban energy systems. That's from January 2021. So these people are pushing the climate hoax like you wouldn't believe, and they're right in there with the WEF. So there's that tiny article from the ABC with the Kiss band selling off their catalogue to globalist overlords. Want to listen to Kiss anymore? Go ahead. Want to listen to any of the music anymore? Go ahead. But once they sell out, their assets and everything they're about are controlled by these entities. I think I might call that whole Norges Bank thing from Kiss to this. I'll tell you what. Now, speaking of globalists and wannabe globalists, Elon Musk has just given in to the Chinese overlords. So now you know that this is happening. People go, oh, no, they're all working for themselves. No, they're all working together. They know the agenda and they're just moving completely towards it. This is how I know it, because this headline, and this is to do with Trump if he wins presidency. I know this is off center. He said he would stop the Chinese electric vehicles from Mexico flooding the US market, and he would put a 100% tariff on them. Now, this is what Musk has done, because Musk saw this coming too, because the Chinese have been building their factories outside of the US, obviously, getting ready to flood the market in the US with cheap electric vehicles made from Chinese components. Now, most cars we drive have got Chinese components anyway, people. But the bottom line is here, it will be a controlled market from China. Remember, every time they try and sell an electronic device into the US or Australia, they get the finger pointed at them in case there's something implanted into it, like the routers, where they can start becoming a problem, I should say, for security. I'm telling you, the globalists want the Chinese as the military police anyway. So this is all hogwash. But they play the game. So here's a headline from Reuters, came out the 6th of April, 2024. Exclusive: Tesla scraps low-cost car plans amid fierce Chinese EV competition. So here is backing out, people. April the 5th, Reuters. It says Tesla has cancelled the long-promised inexpensive car that investors have been counting on to drive its growth into the mass-market automaker, according to three sources familiar with the matter and company messages seen by Reuters. The automaker will continue developing self-driving robo-taxis on the same small vehicle platform, the sources said. The decision represents an abandonment of a long-standing goal that Tesla chief Elon Musk has often characterized as its primary mission: affordable electric cars for the masses. They don't want you to have one, people. This is plainly obvious, and I hope people start to get it. His first master plan for the company in 2006 called for the manufacturing of luxury models first, then using the profits to finance low-cost family car. He's never going to make one for us, because he was never going to. Musk has since repeatedly promised such a vehicle to investors and consumers. Remember, Apple gave up too, people. As recently as January, Musk told investors that Tesla planned to start production of the affordable model at its Texas factory in the second half of 2025, following an exclusive Reuters report detailing those plans. And there's a link to that. Tesla's cheapest current model, the Model 3 sedan, retails for $39,000 in the United States. So that's US. The now-defunct entry-level vehicle, sometimes described as Model 2, was expected to start at about $25,000 US. Not going to happen, people. See, the Chinese win, because they're meant to. It says Tesla did not respond to requests for comment. After the story was published, Musk posted on his social media site X that Reuters is lying. He did not identify any specific inaccuracies. Tesla shares tumbled more than 6% following the Reuters report, but recovered some of the loss after Musk's post. The stock was down 3.6% on Friday's market close. He want to move fast, people, because those Chinese cars, if Trump doesn't win the election, Biden will let them flood the market. And he will lose. He will not be able to compete. Remember, China makes the lithium batteries as well that Musk has to buy for his Teslas. This is insane. Can't people see now that the Chinese are going to win because they're allowed to? Because the globalists want to use them as a world police and a security surveillance state. That's what they want, because they're the best at it. They're even better than the Russians. So, because they're accepted. They win the population over in their own country through force and fear, and people don't see it as a deterrent. They think, well, though, they're doing the right thing. That's why there's 2 million people being re-educated in Xinjiang, which is the Uyghurs, that nobody bats an eyelid at. This is why they're going to win, because we're going to let them win. This is not good. And I'll just finish this globalist exposure, because that's what this is, what I'm doing right now on the podcast, is trying to expose these big players and what the big game's all about, the big agenda, and how they keep, closing it down by saying, oh, I'm not going to do that, like Musk, and then controlling the stock market like that. This is what this is all about, people. These people have manipulated money in the stock market since day one, and they all know how to play the game, because that's what it is. For instance, BlackRock. What are the Australian companies that they are major shareholders in? Getting ready for a shock here, people. This is just completely off center again, but bringing you back to the focus that the whole of the world's, like all of its investments, all of its money, everything to do with how the world changes is influenced by these big companies and their decisions. Okay, so I'm just showing you that all the music you see now, all the movies, it's all been psyoped, all of it, every stitch of it. There's nothing left that isn't there because they don't want it to be there, that they want it to be there, I should say. Anything else will be excluded eventually. And you're going to see a whitewash of all things to do with art, all things to do with science, all things to do with religion, culture. It's going to get whitewashed to what they want. Okay, here are the top 10 holdings for BlackRock in Australia, the Commonwealth Bank. Westpac Banking Corp. What? The CSI. National Australia Bank. What? BHP Billiton. These are the big polluters. That's what, apparently. Wesfarmers. Surprised. The Australian and New Zealand Banking Group. Surprised again, people. Sydney Airport. The Goodman Group and the Telstra Corporation. So we're done. That's just about everything you're involved in. If you've got loans, you've got no way out of this. That's why they're closing the ATMs down, because they want to get rid of cash. Do you know that Armaguard are about to go bust, which means the ATMs can't transport the cash, which is the end of cash just because of that? Is anyone bailing out Armaguard? Let's have a look. Okay, this is an article from abc.net.au, and it came out on the 13th of March this year, 2024. With Armaguard under threat of insolvency, big four banks, remember who runs them, poised to intervene to save cash transport it. Do you really believe that, people? You really believe that? The big four banks are on the verge of intervening in the business of transporting money to avoid a crisis and getting cash to banks, businesses and customers. Armaguard Australia is struggling to stay afloat despite a merger with its biggest rival mid last year, because the plummeting use of cash is making it unprofitable to deliver it around the country. Now, that's their argument. They're going into receivership because there's not enough cash. They're closing down the ATMs, which gives less deliveries to these institutions because they're closing them down. So people are losing access and they can't use them. They're saying people aren't using them. There's still a million people. They did a survey. There was a million people still using ATMs frequently. So this is a furphy. They are deliberately closing down the ATMs so cash is killed. and they're killing Armaguard to do it. So it says a proposal for an emergency intervention is expected within weeks. So now that we know that's happened, because remember this was at, let's get the date of this, was at the 13th of March. No, weeks is now. So let's not read the rest of it. Let's go and see what happened with Armaguard. You ready for this, people? abc.net.au. Armaguard rejects $26 million lifeline to avoid insolvency as Coles ends pause on cash deliveries. Coles. You want to know who runs Coles? Wesfarmers. You want to know who sits as a major shareholder of Wesfarmers? BlackRock. So it says here, and this came out 28th of March 2024, Armaguard has rejected a $26 million lifeline offered by some of Australia's biggest companies to keep the cash transport company afloat. I'll look up Armaguard in a minute, people. The company, which is controlled by trucking magnate Lindsay Fox, so that's who I'm going to look up, had been given until the end of the day to either accept or reject the financial lifeline to avert insolvency and to keep cash flowing to major businesses. This is done on purpose, people. Major banks, supermarkets, Australia Post and retailer Wesfarmers proposed the $26 million rescue package last week to prevent Armaguard's possible collapse. Now, they want this to happen. But the monopoly cash transporter refused to open its books because they know one of the conditions of the proposed package and rejected the lifeline deal on Thursday, confirming it would instead work on its own financial solution, which it won't be able to get. See, they know they're done if they take the money from those places, because those places will close them down anyway. Armaguard confirms it is working constructively with all its customers, including its retail customers, banks and other key stakeholders, regarding both short-term and long-term financial solutions for the industry to remain sustainable. Don't take that word, people. Mick Cronin, Armaguard's group chief executive, said in the statement, Armaguard continues to operate its full suite of services and is confident that over the coming months, it will get the business onto a long-term sustainable footing with appropriate support from the industry. Says on Wednesday, former ACTU Secretary and Lynn Fox Director Bill Kelty represented Armaguard at a meeting chaired by the Reserve Bank Governor, Michelle Bullock, what a name, who emphasised the urgent need for a resolution. And it says Coles ends temporary pause. Prior to the collapse of the deal, supermarket giant Coles confirmed it had paused Armaguard services for the pickup and delivery of banknotes and coins until April the 5th, which is just past, people, as concerns mounted that the money transporter could collapse. So here you go. Nobody wants to use them now. In a statement, Coles said it was temporarily pausing its use of the company, giving its evolving situation, and was not getting rid of its cash payment options, despite reports that its stores had been directed to be card only over the Easter long weekend. And that is exactly what happened to people. That's what happened. It says, we are not transitioning to cashless transactions due to the industry-wide challenges with cash movements, we are taking some temporary steps to prepare for a disruption to Armaguard services. This is completely orchestrated, people, Coles said in the statement. Cash transactions continue to be available in all Coles supermarkets, wait till they're not, people, and Coles liquor stores. But on Thursday afternoon, Coles confirmed it had resumed its services with Armaguard. So there you go, they're back. Only for temporary, people. Coles can confirm that normal cash collection and processing services from Armaguard have resumed, it said in the statement. But for how long, people? Customers can continue to pay with and withdraw cash at Coles, supermarkets and liquor stores this week and ongoing. Incredible that this is happening in our day and age in Australia for this reason. The supermarket also confirmed it had reduced its cash out limit at the stores to $200 per transaction. The ABC understands that Woolworths had not made any changes to its cash pickup and delivery services in the lead up to Armaguard's deal decision and is not expecting disruptions over the Easter long weekend. And it's got, meanwhile, the Transport Workers Union, the TWU, said it is ongoing discussions with Armaguard and amid its insolvency concerns. The TWU represents around 700 of the company's workers, including its armoured truck drivers, who are responsible for the secure transport of banknotes and coins from businesses. Cash-in-transit workers do an important job, but it is a dangerous job, TWU National Secretary Michael Caine said in a statement. Armed hold-ups and deaths in the line of duty are known in this industry. What's happening online more now? It's critical for the safety and well-being of these transport workers that this is resolved quickly with a view to the future. With the public holiday approaching, workers need certainty and peace of mind. Armaguard has been struggling to stay afloat despite merging with rival money mover Prosegur last year due to the rise in cashless transactions because they're forcing it on you, making the transportation of banknotes and coins around the country increasingly unprofitable. There's the big word. Anyway, I've just looked up Lynn Fox. This is the people that own Armaguard. And, of course, it's Lindsay Fox. He's the truck driver that started up in the 1950s and created one of the biggest trucking companies probably in the world called Lynn Fox, which everyone's heard of. You've always seen the message on the back of a truck saying you are now passing another Fox. And it says here he owns Armaguard, or they own, I should say, it's privately owned still, Armaguard, Avalon Airport, Essendon Airport, the K&S Corporation, 20% of it, Luna Park in Melbourne, that's funny because I remember seeing that once, Phillip Island Grand Prix, and that was 68 years ago, people. But as far as I can tell, looking at Lynn Fox, it seems like he's rejected the globalists' way out, which is the $26 million from all these globalist companies, and he's going to go it alone. So we'll see how long that lasts, but there's 24,000 employees waiting to see if cash is dead. But you can see this is a globalist ploy to get rid of them. They're going to say, oh, people aren't using cash, but they actually are. I'll just find that survey, one sec. Okay, so it's from the change.org petition called an Australian Cash and Banking Guarantee, which I've got on the left-hand side of the widget bar of conspiracyoz.com. In one of the updates, it says proof they're forcing us to go cashless. And that's where the info came from with a particular graph. And that's what I wanted to find. I wanted to find out where this information came from. And it says it comes from the number of bank-owned ATMs, and this is from APRA, and the number of ATM withdrawals from the Reserve Bank of Australia. So what it's showing on this graph, and it's dated from January 2020 up to December 2023. So that's as far as the graph goes. And it shows the number of bank-owned ATMs has started back in 2000, was around about, I'm seeing if I can get the exact numbers here, probably about 9,500. It says 9,000. Okay, 9,000. Is that 9,000 or 9? Yeah, it's 9,000. 9,000 ATMs were owned by the banks in the year 2020. So that's only, 3 years ago. This is actually unprecedented to realise how quickly they've gotten rid of the ATMs. And it says it went from 9,000, and by, it looks like the graph only goes up to about June 23, but it looks like it's way below, probably around about 5,000. So half of the ATMs in Australia have vanished in the last 3 to 4 years, half. But this is the clincher. And this is to do with the COVID pandemic as well. Just as the pandemic was kicking off, and this is about January 2020, so it was a little bit, December 19 was when it was declared, but it hadn't really kicked in as a pandemic till March. So in January 2020, according to this graph, it says that there were 30 million ATM withdrawals. And when I look up the latest RBA statistics for ATM withdrawals, it has, and I'll put all this up, it has for ATM withdrawals during January 2024, 30.2 million. So there you go. I mean, the statistics are pretty much the same. And yet they say the ATMs are withdrawn. Are not being withdrawn. They're being not used. So they're getting rid of them. And now it looks like Armaguard will go out of business simply because they are closing the ATMs, making cash harder for people to get. But yet the same amount of people are trying to access cash the same. That's what's happening. So what it says on the actual change.org petition on the 20th of March 2024, he says, hi, cash lovers. Banks are closing ATMs as fast as they can, trying to force us to use their cashless payment systems. And ironically, tonight we had to get takeout for Indian. And when the guy came, the FPOS machine wasn't working. So it looked like we weren't going to be able to pay for our meal. Of course, luckily, I know how those things work. So we just rebooted it and it came back. But I actually said to him, I said, in the old days, which weren't that long ago, people, we used to pay them in cash and tip them. Now these days, no one has cash, so there's no tipping. I actually did get cash out, and I could have probably thrown cash in, but I wouldn't have had enough for a tip because, of course, when I got cash out last Tuesday for the Cash Out Tuesday to do with this petition, where they said everyone in Australia needs to get cash out at the same time to show that we still use it, the ATMs only give $100 bills. That's it. It's like huge amounts. And so you think to yourself, well, wow, no one's got any change. And I remember even where I work, because I get a reduction in the cost of materials because I'm a staff member, I went to go and get a part for home and for an appliance, and they said they didn't have enough cash in the till to change the $100 note I had. Couldn't believe it. And then I had to go and get it changed somewhere else into 250s. They're doing it on purpose, people. This is done on purpose to make you go cashless. Okay, so then they have control over you, the four banks, and those four banks are controlled by globalist entities. This is what is happening, people. Okay. Anyway, to finish off that article, it says, banks are closing ATMs as fast as they can, trying to force us onto their cashless payment systems. Australians are still making about 1 million ATM cash withdrawals per day. So that equals to 30 million a month. And it says, similar number to 3 years ago. And that's true too. It says, but the banks are making it harder and harder for us to find an ATM and get cash. The number of bank-owned ATMs is down 40% in 3 years. It actually looks like 50% to me, from what I can see. Meanwhile, they tell us they need to close branches and ATMs because of changing consumer demand. The only change is the banks hate cash. And they do, because it's a globalist institution, all the way back to the globalists sitting in their ivory towers on their golden thrones. This is so true. And it says, they are gaslighting us and trying to force us to go cashless, but we just want to be able to withdraw our money when we need it. Okay, so other countries, he says, are protecting cash, and it's time Australia does the same. And please ask your friends to sign our petition. This is the easy link to share, and it's change.org/banking and cash guarantee. Go and find it, people. Click on it. And yeah, and put your name on it, because we need to, if you don't use it, this is the old saying, you'll lose it. And if you lose this cash connection, you will never be private again. You will be micromanaged from birth to death. So do it now, people. And just to finish up that whole thing, one of the updates on that change.org, that Australian cash and banking guarantee, is Coles is preparing for collapse of our cash system. And this is what's happening. This is just before the long weekend. It says, supermarket giant Coles is limiting cash out to $200, hoarding its own cash reserves and telling staff to direct customers to card and phone payments over the Easter long weekend. Coles is concerned that its cash could be trapped in armoured trucks, owned by Armour Guard, which may declare bankruptcy as soon as Wednesday next week. Now, that day has passed, and they are saying they didn't declare bankruptcy, and Lynn Fox is going to try and keep it going. So he must be using his own money, the company's own money, to keep Armour Guard afloat, or for the 24,000 employees. It says, next Tuesday is Stand Your Ground and Cash Out Day. So that was last Tuesday, and I did that. And it says, on social media, thousands of Australians are calling on us to make cash withdrawal at an ATM bank. Just do it now, people. It doesn't matter if it wasn't last Tuesday. Just start using the ATMs more. That's the only thing that's going to keep cash alive, is that the banks realise you still want them. And if they try to close them down, we can then fight back and say, well, 30 million of them still using them a month. Why are you doing this? Don't ever forget that the ATMs were brought out by Henry Kissinger in 1984 worldwide. So that was the beginning of forcing you to use a card, as it will. Now they want you to use your phone. See how the transition has happened? It's taken a long time, but they planned this from the very beginning. Now, on another note, if you go to conspiracyoz.com like I have, you'll see I put up the jobless agenda and the golden age coming. That's the two stories I talked about in the last few weeks and probably in the past. about the gold going through the roof and the bankruptcies to match, bringing on the end result, which is a global recession, which is definitely coming. Now, the interesting thing is I just went and checked the bankruptcies to see if it had changed. This is the January, February, March, where they kept it at all-time lows around the 500 companies going bust for those months. These are large companies, by the way, people, not just little ones. And they kept it at 500, but they made the graph look like it was almost nil because the rest of it was on 900s, 7, 8, 900s. And every time around, they change them. They keep them low like that, and they deceptively made it look low too. I was wondering how they were going to do that, but instead of the graph starting at nil and going to 900, it looks like it starts around about the 200 mark and goes to 500. So the 500 looks really low, like we've dropped bankruptcy. It's so deceptive. It's not funny. Go and have a look at it. You'll see. But the funny part is I clicked on the Oz bankruptcies at on the site, conspiracyoz.com, just to see if they had fixed it. I couldn't stop laughing, people. They've actually got, what they've done, they got November at 891 companies going under, which is really bad. Then all of a sudden, it got to December and it dropped to 795, which is still bad, but sort of, you know, not as bad as 800 or 900. Then when it got to January, and you can see this still, it's got 555 companies, but it looks like it's nearly nil, the way they've done the graph. It's not in proportion, but they've done it on purpose so that you see a very low part of bankruptcies and think just by glancing at it that it's okay. It's extremely deceptive what this tradingeconomics.com site has done, but they've probably got that information off ASIC anyway, and they've just structured the graph to look like that. Heading towards the 1,000 a month company blowouts where they just can't pay the bills anymore and they go under, just like Armaguard's about to do. But anyway, it goes from 555 companies in January 24 up to 968 companies. Now, everyone knows, because I would have put it up on the site, it's also got March at historic lows at 595, and they'll fix that too. But let's just dwell on what they've just done. For February 2024, they put it up to 968 companies that have gone bankrupt. But only last week, and this is when I put up the chart for the bankruptcies, when you click on the jobless agenda, go and have a look at the latest one I put up, because I print screen these things so they can't lie to us later. And what I've done is I put up what they had on the site. And you can clearly see for January, they've got 555 companies. You can clearly see it. Then, of course, when you go to the latest statistic, and they kept that there for like as long as it was, like the last few months. Now they've dropped it February up to 968 companies. So they've got January at 555. I think I better redo that again. I think I jumped the gun there. February at 968. So I'm going to go back, re-say what I just said, because I think I just jumped the gun, which I did. Okay, for January, it was still written down as 555 is what they've got. But they had February around about the 250 mark, which is absolutely unprecedented and ridiculous. And I knew it was wrong. So now that we've got them to update, since it's now April and they're still looking at March, they now have February telling the truth at 968 companies going under. I still don't believe the January one. I still think that's the figures have been played with here. This is the problem. We don't trust voting machines anymore, electronic ones. We don't trust the data we're getting from these institutions. It's almost like we're being digitally lied to for a purpose, and that's to keep us calm before the massive digital storm drowns us, because that's really what's coming. It's not about the flooding out there in the real world where they've got the weather machines and they're just flooding everybody out all over the place and blaming La Nina and people breathing out and cows' methane levels. No, this is very, very dangerous, people, because they're manipulating what it looks like the actual true figures that we're used to seeing. Remember, the unis and all the places of learning have been completely psyoped. So we're in a world of pains, just like the Bureau of Meteorology. They're all in on it. Okay, I don't care what any of them say. It's an agenda, and they're all pandering to it. Why? Because governments and corporations around the world have been tied to this agenda because it's the climate change hoax, and that is what drives it. That's the only linchpin they have. If we can knock that one out, they have no legs to stand on, people. That's why we fight so hard to disprove it. And by the way, people, with that bankruptcy story I put up, there are many links to it that you need to have a look at it. And the links are mainly up to 2022, some of them from 2023. Nothing completely, I think there are some up to date, like right up to now, but this is the gradual build up because a lot of the links start, I think, around about the 2020 mark, which is the pandemic, and all through that terrible time. But you've got links like, I'll just click on the first link. This is the first link in the story that I put up called The Jobless Agenda, the latest one. And it says it here. The first one is the Australian Bureau of Statistics, and it's showing a population in Australia of 26,821,557 people as of the 30th September 2023. And it says here that the average weekly earnings, wait till you hear this, people, see if this is up your alley, people. The average weekly earnings is $1,988 a week as of November 2023. Now, I just remember seeing the musicians one was $6,000 a year. So that's from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, people. So if statistics are real, well, believe what you will. Believe it or not. How's that? Then the next one is, this is about the Swiss bankruptcies that happened in 2018, more than ever before. I don't want to read that one because it is not an Australian thing, but it's giving you an idea this is not just an Australian problem, this is a global problem. And it's got a wave of US bankruptcies build towards the worst run in many years. Now, remember, this is when the pandemic was kicking in, so this was always going to happen. And then you've got the coronavirus bankruptcies are coming, we know about that. Then you've got the US business bankruptcies rose by 48% in May. So this is back in 2020. I'll just check that date. 14, I'll just check the date. I just want to make sure it is. Oh, now it wants me to verify my device from the Wall Street Journal, and it is from 2020, like I thought. the pop-ups are unbelievable. Soon you'll have to give a personal ID number before you can view anything online. That's what's coming. And it says, companies that have filed for bankruptcy since the coronavirus pandemic. I just want to click on that and just see if that's the Australian one or whether it's, no, it's an American one. So I won't read into it, but it's from May 2020 and it gives you an idea of some of the big companies that went under in the US. And then they've got the running list of 2020 retail bankruptcies. So I'll just have a quick look at that. I think that's also overseas, but people. But I'll just have a quick check and see if it is in Australia or whether it's overseas. So they've got .com, so it's definitely overseas. So some of these companies, we may not know of them. You know, I'm actually looking at them now and saying I don't know a lot of these American companies that have gone under, but it's retail people. I just looked at one of the ones that went under. It's called the Guitar Center. That doesn't surprise me at all, people. I mean, music's died. It's gone down the hole, and that's why you've got bands like Kiss selling out while they can because they know that there's no going back to the way it was. Okay, so I won't read that link. And it's got the next one, why are more Australians going bankrupt? Now, I'll just click on it, but it's going to be around the pandemic time, people. In fact, it was just before the pandemic, 19th of December 2019 from Yahoo Finance. And it says, Sam is in her early 50s with two adult kids and is on a good income of around $85,000 a year. However, as a single mum, she's been grappling with mounting debt for a number of years. 2 weeks leading into Christmas, she'd accumulated over $66,000 in debt, and the phone calls from banks and debt collectors were non-stop and getting unbearable. With no way of being able to pay it off, she decided to file for bankruptcy. Very common, people. Sam is the new face of middle-income families. Now, keep that in mind, people. This is the middle class the globalists want to crush, okay? And it says, who are more likely to be facing bankruptcy compared to two decades ago. Based on new empirical research from Melbourne Law School, whose research is based on figures from the Australian Financial Security Authority. Here we go, more data, people. The research also shows, and this is from unis again, people, that the overall there's been a significant increase in the level of financial stress that Australian households are facing. Between 1990 and 2008, just before the financial crisis, there were 261% increase in the number of personal insolvencies in Australia. It says those becoming bankrupt are increasingly coming from higher status occupations, have a medium to high level of personal and household income, and have increasing asset and property ownership levels. Isn't that interesting, people? The detailed review is challenging stereotypes of bankruptcy, with society often condemning those who opt for bankruptcy as frivolous with money or on low income, students or the unemployed. Why do people go bankrupt? When diving into insolvency data, there are some other interesting trends around the reasons for bankruptcy and those who are more likely to be affected. Let's see if they say it's because the globalists want to kill the middle class. I don't think they're going to say that for some reason. As a bankruptcy trustee firm, anecdotally, we do find that bankruptcy can happen to anyone at any stage of life. We're often asked if there are patterns, but it's hard to pinpoint as we see such variation. However, this research has shed real insight into the more subtle shifts in family household situations over the last two decades. Reading on, it says, the research found that there are some other important changes in the characteristics of those impacted. For example, there has been an increasing number of bankrupt people who have dependents, who are over 45, who are managers and administrators, professionals and associate professionals, and who have higher levels of personal income and household income. In 1997, unemployment was a key reason for individuals to file for bankruptcy. Nowadays, it's a little more complex. For non-business related bankruptcies, the three key reasons cited were excessive use of credit, that's possible, ill health, and gambling or speculation. It says vulnerable populations are also at risk. On the surface, men and women are filing in similar numbers. However, the reasons for bankruptcy are strikingly different when looking at the two cohorts. This is interesting, people. This is the Melbourne Law Centre. I think it's a Melbourne Law Centre. Let me just check that. The Melbourne Law Firm, or what is it again? This is the people that are actually doing the article. The Melbourne Law School. So it's a school, people. It says, women are more likely to be the sole carers of children. That is true, with these women experiencing a greater degree of gendered disadvantage than other women in the bankruptcy system. State to state, there are anomalies in the data, with a disproportionate number of personal insolvencies across some states and territories. In 2008, New South Wales, Queensland, South Australia and Tasmania had an over-representation in bankruptcies in comparison to their populations. Older Australians are also more at risk, with this cohort citing excessive credit as the cause of bankruptcy compared to their younger and middle-aged counterparts. It says, while many think older Australians are asset-rich and own their own homes, the data show differently with those older bankrupt people often not owning real estate. For many, bankruptcy is the end of a very stressful time where debt has mounted and options for paying it back become more and more limited. It could happen to anyone, and as the research suggests, it certainly is. Now, there are other links here. There's ones like experts warn insolvencies could spike in the coming months due to COVID-19, which is true. That's what happened. Then it's got JobKeeper Payment, Australian Taxation Office. I'm just going to have to quick read of this, people. This is during the pandemic. And it's got here JobKeeper Payment. This is from the Australian Government, Australian Taxation Office. And it's under the title COVID-19 Individuals and Families. The JobKeeper payment was a COVID support measure administered by the ATO. So this is from the 29th of April 2022. So this is when it was stopped, obviously. The JobKeeper payment scheme supported Australian businesses significantly impacted by coronavirus. JobKeeper finished on the 28th of March 2021. In most circumstances, the scheme's last day for payment was the 31st of March 2022. So hasn't got details for it, but I was dying to see what it said, but that's for another day. But still, it was a big deal. That's how people survived. There were people that were sent home because they couldn't pass through other zones, the LGAs, the local government areas, because they were restricted. That's amazing, isn't it? Isn't it amazing to think that this actually happened to everybody? People are trying to forget it, but it actually happened. And to the globalists, they tick the box. Now, moving on, it says, buying time. A wave of bankruptcies is coming in Europe. So that's a European one. And it's got 15 companies facing bankruptcy in the coronavirus pandemic. And I think that's an overseas one too, and it is. And then you've got major companies filing for bankruptcy due to coronavirus. And I think that's another overseas one. I didn't want to get into the overseas stuff because I'm focusing just on Australia at the moment because of that graph. And I'm trying to find stuff that's linked to that. And then you've got, how will Hertz's bankruptcy affect the car industry? So that's another one way back then. This was probably around 2020, and it was. Because remember, no one was going anywhere. You wouldn't hire a car if you couldn't drive anywhere. This was what was happening during the pandemic. The next link, businesses industry groups call for visa process to be sped up as skilled worker shortage stings. So let's have a read of that. Now, this is back in 2022. This would have been prior to when Albanese decided to get the 700,000. So let's just see what it says, because this is good to go back and read the past, people, because believe me, it definitely tells you what happened in the future, because they tell you something, that the market moves to it, and then you go to the future and look, and you realize it was just a manipulation. So it's got here, abc.net.au, April 2022. So way back then, we're talking now 2 years ago. Businesses, industry groups call for visa process to be sped up as skilled worker shortage stings. Now, remember, this is just after the pandemic. It's sort of around about the time when it was starting to water down, and they were screaming for people to come here because most people sat at home getting their $750 a week and didn't want to go to work anymore. They trained them very well to not just work from home, to just be home. So it says here, and it shows an Asian chap in the actual, looks like working in an eatery. And it says, Maria Zia is a vocational education trainer for international students in Brisbane and says her business, like many across the country, has been crippled by the halt to immigration during the pandemic. So she's training them all up to speak English. In March 2020, when we went into lockdowns, that's when it was, we stopped receiving students from overseas, obviously China. I had a class of 60 that dropped down to 6. That's true. Because the same thing happened with the students. When I had students, they couldn't go face-to-face. I lost a lot of students, the guitar teaching, but some of them went online, which was a good learning thing to do, to go through. But in the end, funny too, people, I'll just let you know this. I used to use Skype, obviously. Then I changed to Zoom, obviously. And then I went back to Skype. Why? Because Zoom threw a charge on if you wanted to use it for more, up to an hour. So people like to cash in when they can, people. Anyway, reading on, it says, while borders have reopened and international students and workers can apply for visas in Australia, a backlog of applications has put further delays on what can already be a lengthy, years-long approval process. And she says, since they have opened the borders, everything seems smooth, but that's not the reality, Ms. Zia said. Ms. Zia wants to see the government's visa approval process sped up because we need skilled workers right now. She says it's not going to happen overnight. The labour shortage will take 2 to 3 years to overcome unless we expedite the migration process. That's why they're rubber stamping the visas, people. The visa rejection rates are very high, so the government needs to access that as well. And it's got the single biggest problem currently faced by small businesses is worker shortages. And it's got Alexi Boyd, CEO of the Council of Small Business Organisations Australia, said, it's an extreme situation for small business, Ms. Boyd told the ABC. While the COSBOA, which is the Council of Small Business Associations Australia, has commended many of the structural reforms announced in last week's federal budget, Ms. Boyd said it lacked immediate measures to address labour shortages. Migrants are the backbone of small business economy, Ms. Boyd said. There's a number of industries and a number of our members who have been calling for years now to have the skilled migration list increased for their particular industry. And then it goes on to say, the government has decided to keep the permanent migration cap at 160,000 places. Well, that just went up to 190, and now it's 700,000 all up for 2022 to 23, but will increase the proportion of visas dedicated to skilled migrants to about 70%. Now, this is when Morrison was in. Remember that guy that's done a run of people? I've got to get that COVID stuff up to people, the class of COVID-19. It's a really, really big job. It's very slow. When it goes up, it stays up, all right, as a memory to what happened, and then it should never happen again. So reading on, it says, the Morrison government's migration program will focus on skilled migration. No, it won't. He's gone. With a return to pre-pandemic composition of roughly two-thirds to one-third across the skill and family streams, Immigration Minister Alex Hawke said, long gone. Ms. Boyd said they needed to be more investment in resources for speeding up visa processing and simplifying the process for hiring a skilled worker overseas. I won't read any more, but that was 2 years ago, people. That was 2 years ago where they're saying that the backlog is what's slowing down the skilled migration, and now they need 90,000 tradespeople to work on building sites to try and get the 1.5 million homes built. They're not going to do it. They're not going to get that many people. This is the pandemic completely destroyed all means of keeping society running smoothly. And it was meant to do that. That was one of its goals, was to disrupt. And that is exactly what it did. And there are a few other links too that I just skirted straight through, but I found this one and I thought this was worth mentioning because of the pandemic. 20th of May, 2022, abc.net.au. Wait till you hear this, people. Hundreds of millions of dollars in JobKeeper, remember that, went to a group of private schools that grew their surpluses to almost $1 billion. Funny that. Most private schools that took JobKeeper increased their income during the first year of the pandemic, including some of Australia's most exclusive schools. For the first time, the ABC can reveal that all 395 non-government schools that reported claiming JobKeeper in 2020 and the amounts they received. The ABC has also analysed the incomes and surpluses of these schools, which reported accessing $769 million in wage support. With taxpayers subsidising pay packets, together with these schools, more than doubled their surplus in 2020 to almost $1 billion. Now, they've got a whole bunch of schools listed. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. It's quite a big list. But there you go. It just goes to show you what happened during the pandemic and how everything was carved up the wrong way. But it's got the King's School in Sydney, which is out west in Sydney, claimed more than $8 million. And Melbourne's Wesley College received more than $17 million. The Southport School pocketed $5 million, that's in Queensland. Canberra Grammar, which doubled its surplus in 2020, took $7 million. Hobart's Hutchins School reported $4 million in wage subsidies. South Australia's Sacred Heart College increased its surplus by almost the same amount it received in JobKeeper. And Perth's Hale School tripled its surplus in 2020 after receiving $7 million. There you go. That's how the world works, people. Government schools, public schools, yeah, right. I'll see if they even mention them. I don't even think they will. No, it doesn't look like they did. Unfortunately, most non-government schools were unable to satisfy the strict eligibility requirements. Oh, it's a fair world, people, isn't it? It's a fair world. And this link's a nice blast from the past. It's from a site I used to subscribe to called cansnews.org. But the headline says it all, and I'm not sure if it's 100%, but it's still an interesting take on another globalist company called Coles. It says this is, and I'll just get the date. I'll just do my due diligence and see if I can get the date on here. And it says May the 20th, 2022. It says Coles sacks all unvaxxed staff, clearing the way to shop exclusively at IGA. I thought that headline was gold. It says Coles sacked the last of its unvaccinated staff at the beginning of this year, long after state mandates fell and other industries began allowing the so-called mavericks of the workforce back into the office. The move, along with other supermarket giants, saw thousands of Australians unceremoniously dumped, many of them single mothers or from struggling households. And it's got shop safe at Coles is something that looks good printed in big letters across double page ads to those still suffering from anxiety hangovers. Just don't ask too many questions about the health logic, given unvaccinated people can shop in the store but not stand behind the counter. Speaking of corporate virtue signaling, the same company turned around this week, this is back then, and announced it would be offering its trans and gender diverse employees 10 extra days of paid leave for the purpose of gender affirmation. It says affirmation is a hazy term that Coles describes as any process that relates to the act of gender. It looks like affirmation. Yeah, that's right. Including surgical, social, legal, or medical action. Leave could be granted for anything from an appointment with a lawyer through to full surgery. Gender affirmation leave was timed to coincide with the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, Intersexism and Transphobia, one of the dozens of days and months dedicated to a sexual preference or pronouns. Coles Chief Legal and Safety Officer David Brewster, who also serves as the chairman of the Pride Steering Committee, released a statement. We know that we have at least 900 TIG members who identify as transgender or gender diverse. We need to have proper policy and education in this area so there is clear guidance around taking leave for this important transition in their life. What if you want to become a Martian or some sort of alien? Do they have any alien leave? Like you could go on leave to be an alien or, I don't know, just whatever you want to be. Just make something up and off you go. Anyway. It's only because he's one, the guy in Coles, that he lets them all do it. It's pretty obvious. Coles attached a long and bizarre gender-affirming statement that seems a little over the top for employment that largely involves stacking shelves and pushing trolleys. Its headlines include, encouraging you to be your authentic self and developing our Pride team member network, which doesn't sound like something employers should concern themselves with. This move, described as a way ahead of politicians, add to that logic, reason and fairness, is meant to be an action against trans hate. 2022 has transitioned into a world where an employer is not constantly publicly and preferably financially affirming an employee. They must by default hate them. For most of human history, workers preferred their employers to keep their noses out of any of their private medical business. That's so true. You'll be supported as the gender with which you identify. Wear the clothes or uniform of your affirmed gender. Use the toilets and change rooms of your affirmed gender and be referred to by the name of your affirmed gender too, read a statement issued by Coles. The statement leans heavily towards sentiments of anti-discrimination and equity, which is fine. One is simply left to wonder where this emotionally sensitive Coles Hurt Feelings Committee was when it was ruthlessly sacking unvaccinated staff who simply wanted to keep their jobs and their body autonomy at the same time. Coles went one step further, attempting to impose its vaccination policies on unrelated suppliers, contractors, partners, and anyone working on site. That's true. I remember when that happened too, Bill. And no, if you're an employee with a non-gender-related medical or emotional issue, you'll have to plan ahead and sacrifice some of your holiday leave when you run out of the standard state-sanctioned medical allotment. No one is going to give you a woke virtue point for a hip replacement. It was a good article. I got to hand it to him. It was interesting. This particular story is more sobering. It's an activist post one. It's from that list again. Now, I did notice that list of articles that I've linked to just for that story is also, some of them are repeated in our previous story called The Jobless Hordes Are Coming, also on conspiracyhouse.com. But some of these links need to be redone again and put in context. So it is a good idea to dump them all together like that and keep reading that back and forwards just to get an idea that this is not just an Australian problem either. It's a world global problem, and it's meant to be. This story sort of says it all about the banking sector. It's got, and this is from May the 2nd, 2023, so a year ago, people. It says the banking collapse of 2023 is now officially bigger than the banking collapse of 2008. And that was when the global financial crisis hit. Didn't affect Australia at the time, but it did affect a lot of places around the world, especially the US. The next one's going to hit everybody. There's going to be no way around the next one. So this one from a year ago says, yes, you read the headline correctly. Collectively, the three big banks that have collapsed in 2023 had more assets than all 25 banks that collapsed in 2008 did. Unfortunately, the banking collapse of 2023 is far from over. This is a year ago. We still have 8 more months to go before this year is done, and many more banks are currently teetering on the brink of disaster. Executives at those banks are telling us not to worry, but of course, executives at the First Republic were issuing similar assurances just last week. Personally, I had heard that the First Republic was supposedly had enough reserves to keep going for months, but that was a lie. And now the First Republic is toast. This is what happened in the US people a year ago. The following comes from the official statement that the FDIC issued when it took over the bank. First Republic Bank, San Francisco, California, was closed today by the California Department of Financial Protection and Innovation, which appointed the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation as receiver. To protect depositors, the FDIC, you better get your money out of the banks, people, the FDIC is entering into a purchase and assumption agreement with JP Morgan Chase Bank, National Association, Columbus, Ohio, to assume all of the deposits and substantially all of the assets of the First Republic Bank. This is what I'm saying, people. If they cancel cash, you are trapped with your digits, credit and debit, in that bank. If you have cash, they can't take it off you. Does that make any sense at all? You are now at their mercy. You may have all your money in a bank and it collapses. Then you've got to hope the globalists will bail it out, like JP Morgan Chase did. But this is not the solution, because they want to collapse these banks. This is the whole point. Now, I'm not going to read any more into it, but you can see that that story is about warning you a year ago, and it's going through a list of all the banks that collapsed and what happened to them. That's what that article's about. It's a US story, but it's a global story, a global problem. Now, reading on through the next bunch of links, and this is a comment I wanted to read. It's from the Australian Bankruptcies 2023 Reserve Bank Australia comment. So someone commented, I'll click on it. It's a classic. It's from the Reserve Bank of Australia. It's just like a link on Google Maps. Hilarious. And someone's been allowed to comment a year ago, and they said, fraudster bank promised no rate hikes for 3 years so people would get loans, then jacking up the rates like there's no tomorrow. Just about says it, doesn't it, people? Such a simple statement, but it says exactly what's happened. Now, other links say, business failure rate reaches 15-year high. National Retail Associates call for government action. So that was around, and that was on abcnet.au, 30th of August 2023. So we're getting up to date, nearly. Then I put up one of the stories I put up, fudging the figures, eh? And then another one I put up, ha-ha, really BS stats. And then 2023 was the great tightening as life and choices got harder for most. And then I've got another one that I put up called, this is when I say I put up, it means it's from a story I put up on conspiracyhills.com called Fudging the Figures Again. Now also, I've also put up the Golden Age Coming. This is to do with the gold going through the roof. This is another indicator that people are buying gold because they know something big is about to break. And now a lot of the gold getting sold is by globalists themselves, which push the market up, corporations and the like. And that's an indicator, people, that you know something is coming. So I put it up. I know I talked about it like weeks and weeks ago, but I finally put it up. So if you go to conspiracyhills.com and click on Golden Age is Coming, you'll see when I took photos of the telly when the ABC was on, and I wait for the commodities, because sometimes they never say them because it's so ridiculous. But in this one, I sort of give you an indication over time exactly how it's changed and how you can see it in black and white. So if you go to the first one, you'll see that that's from the 5th of January 2023, and gold was at about $1,856 an ounce. You know, and that's only going back, a year and a bit from what we are now. So we're going to see a massive increase. Then you go to the next month and you see it's still around the same time, the next day actually, from the 6th of January 2023, and you can see that it's only gone down slightly to 1833 an ounce. Then, of course, when you go to the next one, it's the 18th of August 2023, and you see it's gone to $18.91 an ounce. And you can go through the different ones and look at them where it goes up to $1,948. That was in the 26th of May 2023, so nearly a year ago. And then, of course, you go to the next one, it's $1,970 an ounce. That was in the 25th of October last year. And of course, it starts to keep going, people. And then the 11th of October 2023, so pretty close to that other time, you saw it drop down to 1860, and everyone breathed a sigh of relief, thinking globalists aren't coming just yet. Then, of course, when you get to the 8th of November 2023, it goes to $1,968 an ounce Australian. And of course, the rest is history, where it gets gold the 21st of December 2023, it hits 2,333, and has not looked back since, people, as I said, and I keep reporting. So the last one I put up was on the 4th of January 2024, and that was $2,043 an ounce. And of course, if you go to the charts I put up, you'll see that one of the charts I put up that was from the 1st of January 2003 to the 26th of November 2023, and you can see with the global financial crisis on this one. So you need to go to the site to look at these graphs, but do that, and you'll see the first arrow going up from 2008, then the housing collapse comes, the financial crisis lasts till about 2012, this is gold rising, until a steady decline. Now, it almost got to 2000 in roughly 2011, okay, and then by 2012, it started to gradually drop down to about, you know, just maybe 1,500 an ounce, around that, and it hovered. It just, you know, just below 15, and then it hit 15 beginning in 2019. This is when the pandemic hit, and it has gone up ever since. And this is how you know a global recession is definitely coming, because of this pandemic that actually triggered it. Of course, if you go to the other graphs, I've got one here from spot price gold per ounce. This is from the 31st of March 2023 to the 31st of March 2024. So it gives you a yearly one. And it shows that in the 31st of March, it went up to $2,239 an ounce. It's skyrocketing. You can actually see in the chart where it's starting to go vertical around about February this year. It just started to go up and has not coming back down, people. The next time it comes back down will be after the next global recession, which who knows how long that'll last. The last graph I put up was from 2004 to 2024, which again stops. And guess what it used to be in 2024? It was below $500 an ounce. So in 20 years, it's gone to 2,239. And let's go and check and see what it's at right now, people. I'll do a an update live on the podcast, and we'll go and check what it's at now. Okay, so when you click on the graph that's at conspiracyhealth.com on the right-hand side of the widget bar, it shows Australian dollars, but it shows you the US dollar. So you need to do the drop down and put it to US dollars. So that means Australian dollars compared to the US dollar. And then you get the Australian cost of gold to buy an ounce. And I click on it, and it's gone to, let's see what we can get to. This is unprecedented, people. This is so high. It's gone to, I'm just trying to get the date. So on the 7th of April 2024, it is at $2,342 an ounce vertical, people. Get ready, grab those chairs, lock yourself down, hold your breath, because we're going to go through the biggest recession we've ever seen. It is definitely, definitely coming. Time to hunker down, people. And I also put up a bunch of links that go with that gold, golden age coming story. And some of the links, one of them's gold price at all-time highs as next bull run appears imminent. And that was around the 20th of June 2019. So that was obviously prior to the pandemic. Then the next story is from the 2nd of January 2020, so 4 years ago or so. Global uncertainty and economic slowdown see gold shine. And the rally is expected to continue. So there you go. This is when there's a slowdown, people go out and they buy gold. And then you've got precious metal gold below $1,600 as markets await US reaction to Iran attacks. 9th of January 2020. This is when they said there was going to be another war with Iran. And people have forgotten. And then Trump stopped it all. He just blew it out of the water. It never happened. So, And I'll just click on that link just to make sure that's exactly what happened, because I do remember that story when it came out, and it's got here. US President Trump to make statement on Wednesday. Yeah, so he's actual, the markets actually go by what these bigwigs say, excuse the pun. But that's what happens. As soon as they say something, it actually affects the markets, and people run out and do stuff, whether they buy stuff, sell stuff, invest or not invest. And it has to do with these speculations. This is what's dangerous about the world and why the globalists have a stake in how the world's run, because they're the ones that can make or break the markets. Just like George Soros did, the billionaire that broke the English the back of the English dollar pound back in 1998. Look it up. One guy. And that was from a Reuters report. And more links. It says, fear of war sends gold to highest price since 2013, 6th of January 2020. Then you've got another link. Gold declines after Trump's comments on Iran ease war tensions. And that was the 8th of January 2020. So that's what happens. And then it's got the next link. War with Iran begins. Gold hits 1600. That's the 19th of April 2020. And it says, investors, the next link, investors rushing to gold, experts predict $10,000 an ounce. And this is in the 26th of June, 2020. Hang on, I've got to read this because it never got to that. But let's see what they were trying to say. This is from a company I used to get, I used to subscribe to until they kicked me off when they realized I was never going to invest. I just wanted insider information that they were talking about, because a lot of them do that. They give you all this hoo-ha of why you should invest with us and why you should spend cash on this. And they just give you a whole bunch of stories to read. Some of it, most of it was not really true, but some of it actually gave insight into what was coming. So this one, and there's another one that's not really true. It's got investors are rushing to gold. Experts predict $10,000 an ounce. 26th of June 2020, energyandcapital.com. The bullish sentiment on gold is rapidly growing amid both institutional and retail investors as the number of reported COVID-19 cases increases in the US, casting shadows on hopes of a fast economic recovery. This is when it was all doom and gloom, people. The zombie apocalypse. With reported coronavirus cases jumping in southern states, the US has set a daily record for the number of new cases yesterday. According to data collected by Johns Hopkins, 40,401 new cases were recorded in June 25, surpassing the previous record set on April the 24th, which saw 36,000 new cases. There is little doubt the increase in the number of new zombie cases, COVID-19 cases, is a result of more testing. However, health experts say other measures indicate the virus is, in fact, making a comeback. It says, but whether the number of rising cases is simply due to more testing, really, or real proof of a resurgence, matters only little for now. See, governors around the country using reported numbers of COVID-19 cases and deaths to shut down their economies in the first place. They were not considering COVID cases and deaths in their state relative to how other states were testing. Oh no. States that provided the most tests will have no doubt showed the highest numbers of reported cases and vice versa. Point is, they're only looking for the reported numbers. And the reported numbers are rising right now, which puts many state governors around the nation in a sticky political position. If governors choose to increase their reopening phases and increasing numbers of reported COVID-19 cases, they open themselves up to criticism and probably legal trouble over putting people in danger, as well as their original decision to shut down. This is so funny. If they choose to pull back on reopening, they'll be criticised and probably get blamed for playing politics at the expense of business. For now, it looks like governors around the country are choosing the latter. Earlier this week, Texas Governor Greg Abbott put a hold on lifting restrictions and reimposed a ban on elective surgeries to save hospital space after the reported number of COVID-19 cases statewide more than doubled in 2 weeks. Now, it's going through a list of all of them, but I'm just going to get to the $10,000 an ounce. I've got to figure it out. So they're going through this. It's actually quite a long article. I didn't realize it. But I'll just get to the $10,000 an ounce, because it's got to be a globalist push to get people to buy gold, for sure. And it's got, see if I can find it, gold prices responding. With fears of slower than hoped for recovery spreading rapidly, more and more investors are running to gold for the year. Gold prices have increased by 16% and are now flirting with $1,800 an ounce. Yeah, we know all about that. Bank of America strategists believe gold will break through all-time highs in the next 6 months. Chief Global Technical Strategist Paul Siena wrote in a note to clients this week. Are we ready for it, people? The breakout occurred that is now ending quarter two completes an eight-week trading range that has resumed higher. The range breakout targets $1,900 while ahead and shoulders continuation confirmed April targets $1,947. These patterns say gold can make a new all-time high in the second half of 2020 with the quarter three on our mind. Here we go, people. This is where it goes through the roof. Some of us are expecting even bigger moves in gold. In an interview on Wednesday, Dan Oliver, founder of looks like Myrmican Capital, said gold prices could rise as high as $10,000 an ounce, with the Federal Reserve's balance sheets a serious risk of devaluation. Oliver told Kitco News, the Fed, as you know, has been on a massive purchasing spree because of the virus situation. And so there is an equilibrium price of gold is going up. And so the numbers now to balance that balance sheet are enormously high. My forecast for gold prices has changed. I'm at $10,000 now. With a much slower than expected recovery and currency fallout from monetary and fiscal policies already in place, I think we can absolutely expect higher and higher forecasts for gold prices. I agree with this guy. We could soon hear forecasts of $50,000 an ounce or $100,000 an ounce or higher. It happened in 2011. It could easily happen again. Well, he's got a point, although it wasn't then. It's now. So we'll see what happens, people. But that was predictions back then. It could get silly. Maybe you should just go out and buy yourself a tiny little ounce of gold like I've got at home and just hang on to that for a rainy day. But either way, it's going up, people. It's going up because a global financial crisis is coming that is 100 times worse than the financial crisis that was in 2008, 2009. This is the doozy that was meant to happen. And as a final note on the podcast about gold, this story sort of says it all. It's from our activistpost.com. Why gold is such an effective weapon against the government's monetary schemes. April the 15th, 2023, activistpost.com. It says, this is Ron Paul quoting, because gold is honest money. It is disliked by dishonest men. Buying physical gold, and this is the story now, buying physical gold is a time-proven method of securing generational wealth and a security measure often taken in times of economic turbulence. There it is. Gold investing has long been viewed as a hedge against inflation and a store of value against currencies. Throughout history, as coins and currency became debased, those who had more precious metals on hand had many more options for purchasing what was needed and investing. So there you go, people. I'll just leave it at that. I mean, do with it what you will, but that's the solution to the problem that's coming, is to just buy a tiny bit of gold, hang on to it, and watch what happens. Okay, people, this is the Conspiracy Oz podcast for Sunday the 7th of April, 2024. Thanks for listening. Over and out.